Good morning, guys. Good morning. So the next trade that we'll talk about, we're not going to be able to talk about all 48, but the next trade is an interesting trade, an important trade, and very important in the modern context, Emunas Chachamim. Loosely stated, Emunas Chachamim means belief in Chachamim, belief in our Masara, belief in Torah Shebaalpeh. We're living through one of the great, great controversies between the Purushim and the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim deny Torah Shebaalpeh. One of the most famous controversies around the Purushim and the Tzedukim surrounded Sefiras HaOmer. The Tzedukim read the Pasuk in Parshas Emor literally, Mimacharas HaShabbos. They believe that Omer began every year on a Sunday. So they started counting the Omer every year on the Sunday after Pesach. If you begin counting the Omer on Sunday, then Shavuos also falls on Sunday every single year, because they interpreted the word Bimacharas HaShabbos literally. Does anyone know what other famous controversy around another famous Yom Tov? Yom Kippur. What was the machlokas between the Tzukim and the Purushim?
The Torah,
the Torah says, very good, excellent. In Parshas Achrayimos, Ki Be'anan Eirai Al HaKaparas. The literal translation is to walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the smoke already billowing. But Chazal reinterpreted that you should make the smoke in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Kohen Gadol would walk in with the coals and with the spice and the smoke when in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This debate more or less raged close to 1500 years. Even in the days of the Rambam, in the 12th century, the Rambam was still battling modern day Tzedukim. Anyone know what the modern-day Tzedukim in the days of the Rambam were called?
Karaim.
They weren't necessarily from the same ethnic group, but ideological. It's about, I think, an 8th or a 6th century movement. So this struggle to establish the integrity of Torah Shebaalpeh. If you don't believe in Torah Shebaalpeh, that's heresy. It's not just believing in the divinity of Torah, but in Emunas Chachamim, the ability of Chazal to interpret the Torah. When Hashem tells Moshe at Har Sinai, I'm going to come and speak to you freely in the cloud, because I want everyone to see how freely you're speaking to me when they're terrified. Ba'avur, Yishma ha'am b'dabri imach, they'll see me speaking to you, v'gam b'chayamino li'olam, and they'll trust you forever. Moshe dies 40 years later. What does it mean, v'gam b'chayamino li'olam? So the aminu li'olam means Moshe is the first rabbi. He's the first person who interprets Torah Shebaalpeh. Now, what are the challenges of Emunas Chachamim? How do you achieve Emunas Chachamim? What dangers of too much Emunas Chachamim? So let me discuss something which the Sri De'esh, anyone who the Sri De'esh was, happened to have his sefer on my desk right now. What?
He survived the Holocaust.
Right, very good. Rabbi Yaakov, Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, he was the last rector of the Hildesheimer Institute in Germany, which is a very, very famous yeshiva in Germany, which probably was one of the only top-tier rabbinic yeshivas in Europe to combine rabbinics or learning with broader studies. Some of you may know David Zvi Hoffman, if you've heard of him, or Israel Hildesheimer, or Avram Ilya Kaplan. Google the Hildesheimer Institute today. Very fascinating, fascinating yeshiva in Germany. Anyway, he was the last Rosh Yeshiva or head of it. He escaped the war, and he resettled in Switzerland, Montreux. He's a big, big Talmud Chacham. He's part of the Slobodka Musar. He wrote a lot about Slobodka Musar. Anyway, big, big Talmud Chacham. He writes in his sefer called Sri De'esh, a lot of very, very modern Shailos V'tshuvos, one of the first people to discuss. He was very involved, interestingly enough, in Germany in the 30s. The Germans, Yimach Shemam, wanted to ban Shechita. And they wanted to say you can only do Shechita if you first stun the animal, basically kill the animal brain death by whacking it in the head. Now, Alpi Pashtos, that's not Shechita, that's an Avela, because the animal's already dead before Shechita. He led a movement among some Rabbanim to try to justify stunning or stunting, I forget what it's called, to try to justify it halachically. And he almost had it passed, and Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, who was the reigning Talmud Chacham of that generation, didn't allow that psak. For whatever reason, he felt that psak wasn't appropriate. So many, many Jews in Germany in the 30s didn't eat meat for years because the Nazis had banned Shechita, so they just had to eat dairy or import their meat from other places. In those days, importing meat into Germany was not easy. Anyway, so the Sri De'esh wants to know the following question. How do you reach that sweet spot, that balance, that calibration between Pilpul Chachamim and Emunas Chachamim, Pilpul Tamidim? On the one hand, we spoke last week about creative thought, understanding new ideas, questions, answers, intellectual honesty. On the other hand, Emunas Chachamim. So reading a Tosfos, do you want to challenge Tosfos? Or do you want to accept what Tosfos says? You're reading a Rashba. You want to challenge what the Rashba says? Or accept what the Rashba says? So that's this question. I'll give you two basic ways to resolve it. Number one is, can you be creative and challenging in a reverential fashion? Namely, you know that Tosas knew Torah at least 1,000 times better than you did, at least. But the only way that you'll appreciate what Tosas was saying as opposed to what someone else was saying is by aggressively questioning and challenging Tosfos, so you can get to the heart of how they view the sugya, because you relish and value each and every perspective of the sugya, especially one that was hatched by someone that knew so much better than you do. So to get to the core of it, you have to challenge, because if you don't challenge, you won't be able to deconstruct the logic and understand it. It'll be a statement without depth, without layers to it. Think about all the times we've challenged Rishonim by asking questions. Think about how Tosfos challenged every Rashi that he read. It wasn't disrespectful to his grandfather, because Tosfos was really interested. You show more respect and reverence to someone that you challenge and won't understand. And if someone that I don't care about says something to me on the train, I'll just pass it off and brush it off. But if someone that I really care about says something to me, what does he mean? What does she mean? Let me try to understand that better. Let me take the time to invest intellectually, emotionally, in better decoding and deciphering what they meant. So the goal is reverence, but the process is creative. Number two, the second question is tonality. If your tone is going to be very, very disrespectful and very flippant, and Tosfos says this, but I say this, and I'm better. Famous story of the Gemara in Brachos, where Rabbi Yochanan was teaching his Talmidim. Remember, and he told about some story of some jewels under the sea, and one of the Talmidim started scoffing and laughing, and Rabbi Yochanan, anyone famous story of the Gemara in Brachos? So, one of the, I have the Gemara here, let me, it's a Gemara in Brachos, in the Lamids, where Rabbi Yochanan was giving a drasha, and he talked about the malachim, and one of the students started laughing, and that student then went off into a boat, and he saw that the malachim underwater were behaving exactly like Rabbi Yochanan had said. So that student returned to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan, he said, "Well, I saw what you told me. It's true." Rabbi Yochanan was so angry, he said, "Oh, now that you've seen it, then now you're going to accept it." And had you, I'm sorry, it's above a basar ayin hay. Had you not seen it, you wouldn't have accepted it. And Rabbi Yochanan actually basically killed him. I mean, again, we don't really know what this means, how a person kills another by looking at him. But that story in Bava Basra highlights the fact that, oh, you're only going to accept it because you've proven it empirically. So it wasn't so much that he didn't accept it, because it was a very, very strange and exotic story, but it was the laughing and the scoffing and the ridicule. And to be very, very careful today, there's a lot of ridiculing of Chazal, especially since so much of their medicine and astronomy and science may not necessarily hold up to modern science, and we don't have a responsibility to accept their science and their medicine, and we've progressed in so many areas, but morally and halachically we're still submissive to them because they're closer to the point of transmission. And that's the challenge of living in a modern world. If you live in a modern world, you accept modern science, you accept modern politics, you accept modern technology, you accept democracy. So you accept everything about your world as being progressive. When it comes to moral authority, you look back to Chazal as the point of origin, because they were so much closer to Har Sinai, there's such a strong Masara. So these are two ways I would encourage you to balance between trying to be creative, modern, and progressive, and still accepting Chazal, Emunas Chachamim. On the one hand, to realize that they, Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim, they knew this world of Torah and Hashem's moral will so much deeper than we ever will, but we'll only understand how they knew it by pouring and delving into their comments and trying to dissect it through question, answer, challenge, and trying to find a response, not challenge and defeat them. Second of all, the tonality. You can't use tones, chas v'shalom, that are flippant or cocky or disrespectful to Chazal. Let me tell you a story that happened with Noda Behuda. Noda Behuda became the rabbi in Prague in the middle 18th century. So when he first came, so the great wise men of Prague decided to try to, catch him. So they came up with this strange, bizarre, fictional question about a behema whose back hind had become dislodged, and whether it's a trefa or not a trefa. So they're all sitting around the Noda Behuda, who's very young when he took over the position in Prague, and he's giving all sorts of svaras, and they're asking questions because they studied it for weeks. And then he says, "Okay, we'll be machmir." Then they ask him a whole bunch of questions. Let's be mekel. At a certain point, he stops the conversation. He says, "You know what? This is a fake question. Fake news." How do I know it's a fake question? Because when a Rebbe speaks, he doesn't just speak from wisdom, he has siyata d'shmaya. When Hashem gives someone information in Torah, and when there's a real question that I have to solve, I know that Hashem is helping me. But I feel that Hashem is not helping me here. This must be a fake question. It was a fake question. Also, when you're asking a Rav a question, again, not just the Chazal and Rishonim. Hashem wants that answer to be delivered. Hashem wants halacha to be maintained. The Siyata D'Shemaya to take that into account also. We don't subscribe to Das Torah. We don't submit ourselves in every decision we make to the will of Gedolim. We decide whom to marry based on who we fall in love with. We decide which car to purchase based on consumer reports. We decide which finances to invest in. But we should certainly have that respect that people that have studied a lot of Torah have important ideas to tell us in the world of morality, in the world of relationships, in the world, right, in purely isolated worlds like finance or, sports or areas that have nothing to do with morality per se. So obviously in those areas we don't have to necessarily submit ourselves even to the advice and guidance of everybody. Okay? Have a good day, everyone.